Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Good evening and welcome to Spirit Lounge. You're on Joy 94.9 and you're with the Priest, the Pom and the Poof.
Again, because we were absent last week, weren't we?
We left Andrew.
You left me all alone to fend for myself in the cold studio.
Some of us have to work, Andrew.
You say that like I never work a day in my life.
I reckon you had a ball without us, actually, but I couldn't listen, so...
I don't know what he got up to. You'll have to catch the podcast. We've got our podcasts actually going up every single week. So if you do miss out on anything, like you lovely ladies did last week, catch up with the podcast on joy.org.au.
And that's a big thanks to Peter, isn't it?
Yes, Pete does our podcasts every week, and he's been working really hard with them. So
Priesty,
thanks for that.
Why do you think he's being so nice to us? Lovely
it's Valentine's
ladies.
Day.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. I told him he had to because we're spending our Valentine's Day with him instead of our partners.
Yes.
Mind you, my partner's at a meeting, so that makes no difference. Well, but can I tell you, we had Valentine's Day on Friday night.
Oh, that's nice.
And we had Christmas as well.
Okay, that's a bit screwy.
Yes.
That's Christmas really late and Valentine's early.
Yes. Well, you see, our kids, our gorgeous kids who live with us, brought us tickets to the Chorus Line.
Oh, did you see it?
It was fabulous. We went on Friday night.
Fabulous.
And we went out for dinner beforehand and we thought it could be our Valentine's.
Aww.
And we went to this lovely little restaurant that was fusion Asian, I think they call it. It was magnificent. And the waiter comes out and they say, now, on a scale of 1 to 10, how hungry are you? Well, we're, you know, whatever it was. And then how many, you know, pick 4 dishes. And we both picked separately and we both picked exactly the same. So we had our 4 dishes and they come out and serve you food. And
Well, we've got a fun packed show tonight, girls and boys. We are going to catch up with Jenny and Lisa again. These are our intrepid travellers from San Francisco who are, I guess, more than halfway now around the world, aren't they, on their trip?
Yeah.
And so we're going to connect with them. I hope they've got a phone line in Nairobi. So we're going to hear about their latest travels. We also are going to talk about the history and legends and traditions of Valentine's and Cupid and everything to do with hearts and bows and arrows and falling in love and all that gorgeous
and
stuff.
And we're going to share some very exciting news.
We have some very, very exciting
news. At
the
end of the show.
Yeah. I wonder if anyone's listening tonight. Do you think everyone's out having dinner together? Should we just chat amongst ourselves? Should we?
Yeah, look, let us know if you're listening because we really might otherwise feel a bit lonely. SMS us on 0427JOY949 or you can phone on 1300. Is Jerry out there, by the way?
Before I tell people to ring. Yes, I saw him out
Jerry's
there.
Jerry's out there, so you can ring and make a date with him, 1300JOY949 or email on air at joy.org.au.
Yep, we'd love to hear what you're doing tonight, especially if you're listening to us. We're very, very glad of your company because us little three people here in the studio where our other halves are probably not quite so pleased that we're in the studio. Let's kick off with this is a unanimous favourite from all of us, Adele and Love Song. And you're on the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9 and happy Valentine's night to everyone who we hope's listening. We have a feeling no one's listening because everyone's out having dinner with their beloved.
Oh no, Peter said, sent a message saying happy Valentine's Day, my friends.
Oh, happy Valentine's, Peter.
And he also suggested that it's easier to subscribe to your podcast, whatever that means.
Oh, okay. Right. Well, we better try it.
That means that when you visit our website, you don't have to you can subscribe to our podcast using whatever music management program you use. Like I use iTunes on my
computer. Does that cost me money?
No, it's free.
That's all right.
It's free. And then that just means like every time that you start up your music program, it automatically downloads any of the episodes that you haven't listened to on your computer.
So it will just appear on people's.
So it just appears on your listening device, and you can listen to it and always have the latest one there.
I don't know if I'd like that. I hate it when people SMS me, you know, with advertisements for things that I don't want to know about.
And you don't really know how they got hold of your number. That's the worrying thing,
isn't
it?
That's really, really annoying.
We knew. Anyway, we've been looking at the history and how Valentine's came about and who Cupid really was. Shall I start and talk about Cupid?
You can talk about Cupid. Yeah. I'll talk about the more intelligent Valentine's Day.
Study. Study. I didn't know this was a competition. So, in Roman mythology, Cupid, Latin Cupido, meaning desire, is the god of desire, affection, and erotic love. He's often portrayed as the son of Venus, goddess of hope, and Mars, god of war. His Greek counterpart is Eros. That's quite interesting because people get confused between Cupid and Eros, don't they? So Cupid's Italian and Eros is Greek. You see?
Cupid always just, when I think of Cupid, I think of that, you know, that little angel figure who shoots arrows from the sky.
The arrow of love. And he's got little wings, hasn't he?
Yeah.
He flies.
Is that what we're talking about
here? Well, I think so, yeah. And although Eros appears in classical Greek art as a slender, winged youth, there you go, during the Hellenistic period, he was increasingly portrayed as a chubby boy. I don't know how he flew if he was chubby. During his time, Iconography acquired the bow and arrow that remain a distinguishing attribute. A person or even a deity who is shot by Cupid's arrow is filled with uncontrollable desire. There you go. That's
goodness
Cupid for
me.
You. Cupid and Eros. I wonder if they ever met.
And had children.
We could rewrite history, couldn't we?
We could. Now, St. Valentine's, it's really, people don't really know too much about St. Valentine's. I think they make it up as they go along. Mm. But it's been celebrated, February's been celebrated as a month of romance for a long time. But who St. Valentine was and how he became associated with this is sort of a little bit up in the air. But there's several theories, so I think we should talk about the theories.
Go on, then.
What do you reckon? The first, there was three different saints named Valentine who were all martyred, so you really didn't want to be named Valentine, did you? And one legend contends that Valentine was a priest who served during the 3rd century in Rome, and when Emperor Claudius II decided that single men made better soldiers
than married men,
than those with wives and families, he outlawed marriage for young men. And Valentine, realising the injustice, continued to perform marriages for young lovers in secret. And Claudius, when he found out about him, off with his head. Well, I don't know how he
stoned to death
him,
or whatever.
Did. Yeah.
Oh, dear. Well, there's another story suggesting that Valentine may have been killed for attempting to help Christians escape harsh Roman prisons, where they were often beaten and tortured. Didn't sound very nice in those days. According to one legend, an inmate actually sent the first Valentine greeting after he fell in love with a young girl who visited him during his confinement. And this young girl, excuse me, was allegedly one of the jailer's daughters. Before his death, it's alleged that he wrote her a letter signed "From Your Valentine," an expression that we still use today. Yeah, it's all a bit sort of lots of tragedy surrounding this, isn't there?
But I like this bit. They were talking about a festival, Luperci, an order of Roman priests would gather at a sacred cave where the infants Romulus and Remus, the founders of Rome, were believed to be cared for by a she-wolf. Now, listen to this bit. The priests would sacrifice a goat for fertility and a dog for purification. Then they would strip the goat's hide into strips, dip them in the sacrificial blood, and take them to the streets, gently slapping both woman and crop fields with a goat hide.
Sounds disgusting.
Far from being fearful, Roman women welcomed the touch of the hides because it was believed to make them more fertile in the coming year.
Well, I like that. I like the one from the Middle Ages in Europe, certainly in England and France, that February the 14th was the beginning of the birds' mating season.
Oh.
Yeah, that's kind of cute. I like that one.
Yeah. Well, they reckon in Rome, though, too, that the city's bachelors would each choose a name and become paired for the year with the chosen woman. Often. But Valentine's greetings were popular as far back as the Middle Ages, and they reckon that the oldest 9 Valentine, still in existence today, was a poem written in 1415 by Charles, Duke of Orleans, to his wife. He was in the Tower of London.
He was imprisoned.
Do you reckon he ever expected us to still be talking about that hundreds of years later?
No. But then King Henry V, he cheated because he hired a writer
to write to Catherine of Valois.
Yeah, so he really, you know, he didn't even try it himself.
Yeah, but he obviously got the idea from the Duke of Orleans, you see, all those years ago. Yeah.
And he didn't get Helen Steiner Rice cards.
No, he didn't. He was a bit of a copycat, I reckon.
With all those beautiful, beautiful love poems.
Let's have another song, because we're having a little bit of a problem trying to get hold of Jenny and Lisa, so we will keep... this is what happens when you try and dial a US mobile number in Nairobi, of course. So we're going to keep trying them. And anyway, I would like to dedicate this next song to my beloved, gorgeous wife, who is at home. And my gorgeous, beloved DJ here is screwing this up really well.
I'm terribly sorry. That was the wrong button. Wrong button.
One of our very special songs is Have I Told You Lately by Rod Stewart, which if Andrew can work my iPod, we're going to hear.
I have figured out how to work it.
And darling, I hope you're listening, and this is for you.
And you're in Spirit Lounge with Andrew, Bertie and Joy.
Known as The Priest, The Pom and The Puff.
Now that track that we just heard was, first we had Rod Stewart, and then we heard one from Stephen Curtis Chapman, who is our Artist of the Month. He's quite interesting. We've got another track of his coming up later on in the show, but he's quite a prolific artist, so we've got a few different ones from him coming up.
And who is he? Because I've never heard of him.
He's a Christian music composer and songwriter. And he sings his own stuff. He's actually very involved with adoption, and he runs like an orphanage, and they kind of help assist to find safe places for children to live. So he and his wife do that, and they have actually named the orphanage after their child who tragically passed away. I think it was a few years ago now, but you can kind of, if you listen to a few of his albums, you can kind of hear a bit of his journey coming through as well, and the death of his daughter. But he does have a son that is still around.
And what country was he born in?
I believe he was born in the US. I'm not 100% what state, though.
And do we know where his orphanage is?
It is somewhere... it was a couple of weeks ago that I was reading this. I believe it is somewhere in China.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay. And it's probably full of little girls.
Probably, yes.
So I wonder if they let gay people adopt them.
Well, in China, I doubt it, but they may. In the States, I think it depends which state they're in, doesn't it?
I'm not sure. I hunted on the website to try and find some information about that, but my search was fruitless.
Oh, no. I know a couple of lesbians in America who adopted some Chinese kids. Yeah. Both girls, of course. Yeah,
there's a plethora of girls over there, sadly, but maybe it'll change one day.
Well, haven't they got rid of that rule?
I think they have. I think you can have more than one kid, and I don't think there's so much stigma attached to the fact that you have a girl. Because they must have, you know, too many boys, don't they?
Yeah, I was watching a documentary about one country, and I think it might be China. And yeah, especially in the country, they have all these boys, and the parents want boys because they look after them in their old age. And the boys go to the city to try and find girls to marry.
Yeah.
And the girls are actually then into business and having a career and don't want to marry some hick farmer and go back and look after his parents. So there's a huge problem.
But also the interesting point demographically about China that my neighbour was telling me, because she works for the Chinese, is that if you think about it, for the last couple of generations or more, they've all just had one child, okay? So that one child has one set of parents and two sets of grandparents who have all put their life savings into educating this one child. So apparently what's happening now is you've got a new generation of Chinese people who are in the main, quite highly educated. And they don't want, as you say, they don't want to be pig farmers, and they don't want to, you know, work in the fields or do whatever. They all want to go to the cities and go to university and maybe even travel and, you know, become lawyers and doctors and whatever. And so actually they're having a problem because they're going to run out of people who want to just still work in the traditional ways in China, which of course is mainly farming out in the countryside.
And of course all the factories and stuff.
Yep, all the factories, all the sweatshops, all the factories. So no one wants to do that anymore. And so first of all, class system is actually being born. And secondly, you know, it is beneath people. People have bigger ideals these days. And so, yeah, China manufacturing actually is going to probably have a really big problem in the next decade.
And a lot of people come out to places like Australia to study and see a different lifestyle. Well, they don't want to go back.
No, they don't. No.
You know, and there's a huge issue with a lot of gay Asian students. They don't want to have to go back and face being forced into marriage.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't, you know, when they can stay in the country here.
Because they're expected to procreate, aren't they?
Yeah, they certainly are.
Anyway, there we are. That's our ramblings on about China and stuff.
Now, how we got onto that was we were talking about Stephen Curtis Chapman, and he has our next track. And it's called All About Love. I thought this was quite appropriate for Valentine's Day.
And you're on the Spirit Lounge, Joy 94.9, with the Priest, the Pom and the Puff. And finally, we've got through to our friends in Nairobi. We're catching up with Jenny and Lisa again, our intrepid travellers from San Francisco. These two brave hearts left their home in California last June to embark on a 12-month trip through 15 of the developing countries across Asia, Africa and South America. They're in search of the super gays. These are the people who are creating change for the LGBTI communities in the areas of the world where it's still outlawed or unaccepted by society, and in some case both. Their project is called Out and Around, Stories of a Not-So-Straight Journey. I love that name. Their interviews with these extraordinary people and their stories are all recorded on their website. We've been following Jenny and Lisa's progress by talking to them every couple of months. We last spoke just before Christmas in December, when they had, I think, just got to Nepal. So girls, how are you and where are you now?
Jumbo, we're in Nairobi, Kenya, and we're really excited to talk to you guys again.
Well, it's great to chat. Now, if I can rewind a little bit, because we love to pick up where we left off. Now, you stayed in Nepal for a very, very long time. It sounds a very spiritual place. Seemed to be quite a turning point for you in terms of reevaluating and assessing the life that you left and the life that you're living. What in particular made you stay so long in Nepal?
Yeah, I mean, Nepal really blew us away. This is a country that doesn't even have a single gay bar in the country. And recently, the Nepalese Supreme Court made the most progressive decisions to not only approve same-sex marriage, but also create a third gender for transgender individuals. And now there's even an LGBT center in construction. So from that perspective, we were just like, my God, like, this is so amazing. What's going on in terms of LGBT rights. And, you know, being lesbians, we just can't get enough of it, the outdoors. So we spent about 3 weeks trekking in Nepal and going through the Himalayas and just seeing some real natural beauty. And I think after about 6 months of travel, we just were ready to slow down. So we decided to spend 45 days in Nepal. We met some amazing super gays. We met the two members of the Blue Diamond Society, who are the first LGBT organization in Nepal, and it's actually one of the largest LGBT organizations in the world. So, you know, being from San Francisco, we thought, oh my God, the Supreme Court has approved same-sex marriage. That's not even something that we have in our own home. We just really, really enjoyed Nepal, and it's a very tolerant society. So, you know, with everyone we met on our treks, we talked to them about being a gay couple, and you know, from the times that I got my hair cut in Kathmandu, you know, I would tell them, you know, I'm from San Francisco, you know, my partner and I are traveling. Did you know that in your country, the same-sex couples are able to get married? And, you know, it's just a very exciting place to be.
It sounds incredible, and it is so often true, isn't it, that some countries just go in leaps and bounds, whereas other countries like ours, you know, we battle away trying to get legislation passed, but I think perhaps they have less bureaucracy, I don't know. Now, Jenny, I've got a question for you, because I was reading your website, which I just so love reading, it's so well written, and on the 2nd of January, you wrote a really moving account of how your lives have really changed in the last 6 months of travel. You were very reflective, very philosophical about your old life and the demands and routines and responsibilities that we hold down with mortgages and corporate roles and all that kind of stuff. And in an effort to realize the ideal life when you return home, you've sought the wisdom of spiritual literature and tarot cards and Buddhist scriptures, and you've even revisited the Bible. What have you both learned so far, and what changes do you really want to implement when you get home?
Well, I wrote that post right after 2012, right after the New Year's, and we celebrated the New Year's in Mumbai on this beautiful terrace, you know, with some friends that I knew in Mumbai, and I just felt like, my God, this is such an amazing life, you know? And I was thinking, oh, well, I have to go home eventually, and how am I going to keep living my ideal life? So I think my reflection is that, if anything, this year has really taught me that anything is possible. I mean, to be able to find, first of all, just a life partner with Lisa, I just never even thought that was possible. And then to actually travel the world, and to be able to travel the world and have the finance to do it, and to be able to still keep my job at home, those are all things I never thought would be possible. And then on top of it, to suddenly become a filmmaker and be interviewing all these amazing people, like, it's just blown, you know. Really, 2011 really blew me away. And so as I go back and think about 2012, and okay, in June, we're heading back to the United States, and we're going to go back to work and all the responsibilities of home. I think what we have learned is, first of all, you really have to think about and imagine what your ideal life looks like. Because I think at home, it's so easy to be caught up with all of your to-do lists, and you don't have time to think about what you actually want. And if you can't define what you want, you can't go after it. And so the first step is imagine your ideal life. And then the second step is really to prioritize your life so that you can achieve your ideal life. And prioritizing means, yeah, you know, maybe spending an extra 2 hours at the office would help, but it also takes away time to do other things. So it's really thinking about, you know, at the end of your life, what do you want to look like, and how can you make sure you're going towards that?
Yeah, no, you've obviously...
The third thing...
Sorry, go on.
Oh, okay. And the last piece of it, I think, is just reflection and stillness. And that's something that, being at home, it was hard to do. But being away, especially spending 2 weeks at an ashram in India, that really gave us the habit of just meditating every day. And that's something that we've kept up even outside the ashram. And that's just been a great habit.
We'll be back with Lisa and Jenny from Kenya shortly. And you're on the Spirit Lounge with the Priest, the Pom, and the Poof. And we're catching up with Jenny and Lisa, who are travelling around the world talking to super gays. Now, you went from Nepal to India. Tell us a bit about the highlights of your time in India.
Yeah, we loved India. India, since 2009, when homosexuality was decriminalized, the LGBT movement has really united. I think... we spoke to the leading attorney from that case, who just talked how it galvanized the country and brought people together. And I think they've really strengthened their movement, and they have a clear sight of what they want. We talked to Prince Manvendra, who is one of a royal family member, actually, who is in the Rajasthan area. And he's doing some amazing things. He actually spoke on Oprah in America twice now, to talk about what it's like to live in a traditional Indian society and be royalty and be disowned publicly by your family. And yet he still presses on and founded an HIV agency in Rajasthan. He's also currently working on building a LGBT senior retirement home. So that's quite amazing. And he was recently participated in a Undercover Princes, the reality TV show from the BBC. So Prince Manvendra is definitely the most visible member of the LGBT movement. But the people who blew us most away actually were a lesbian couple, Betu and Maya.
and they run an emergency shelter from their home for women who have been kicked out by their families and don't have a safe place to go. So we definitely learned of the difficulties primarily in gender in India. Hinduism is pretty tolerant towards homosexuality, and it's really the family structure and the gender inequality that poses the most difficulties for LGBT people. So when we met Betu and Maya, and they discussed with us, you know, how difficult it is for women to even just have their freedom from their families, to be able to leave the house and, you know, not to have to leave a number and tell everyone where they're going, not to have marriages arranged for them. You know, we really found that it's quite hard to be lesbian in India. And these two women who are running this home were just, you know, we kept asking ourselves, wow, like, would we open up our doors and you know, have people in our home 24 hours a day? We would like to think so, but definitely Betu and Maya showed us just how challenging that can be as well.
Now, I must admit, when I was reading your stories of India, that really jumped out at me off the screen as well. I mean, they just seem extraordinary. And also what I hadn't realised was still how much India segregates men and women, especially in public. And we were rolling about laughing at your stories of being thrown out of restrooms due to mistaken identity. So has Jenny managed to get you into a dress or a sari yet then?
Oh yeah, no way. I'm definitely too far gone for that. But it's definitely hard if you're a butch woman, if you're androgynous. I mean, so much of Indian society is set up where there are women's lines and men's lines, and mainly that's to protect women because you can get trampled on in India. It's definitely a chaotic place, and so you have this daily, you know, dilemma. It's kind of like when you go to the women's room to use the bathroom, and everyone looks at you like, you know, they want to say, there's a man in here. But when you go into a movie theater, when you line up for the Taj Mahal, when you go to the mall, they pad you down. And, you know, oftentimes I got such intense stares that I wanted to just jump into the men's lines, but no one would really look at me. But then when they pad you down, you think, oh, shit, I'm going to get in trouble if they find out I'm really a woman. So it's, you know, it's definitely a dilemma. I rarely saw women with short hair, and I rarely saw any androgynous women. But you know, it's a very much a patriarchal society. So it all goes back to gender equality too. And I think women don't quite have the freedom to express themselves the way they want to. And, you know, every time I could, I spoke up and I was like, yeah, hey, hi guys, I'm a girl. Like, it's okay, I'm here. Like, isn't this funny?
You know what, Lisa, great. you're probably famous in India now, but you don't know it.
yeah, I like to think I'm starting to spread a whole new look.
So you guys moved on to Africa. Have you done Kilimanjaro and your Serengeti safari? What's been going on in Africa?
Yeah, so it's been quite an adventure. We went on our Serengeti safari, which that was my dream, actually. Lisa's not as keen on animals, but, you know, I wanted to find everything from the Lion King movie, which I think I did. So that was fantastic. We spent 7 days riding a jeep through the Serengeti and Ngorongoro Crater. And we did climb Kilimanjaro, or at least Lisa climbed Kilimanjaro, about 2 hours from the summit. I actually had an altitude issue where I lost eyesight in my left eye for a good 6 hours because of the altitude. So that was a bit scary.
Wow.
But as soon as I got down, it came back again. Yeah, so that was quite an adventure. But now I tell Lisa, she knows how much I love her because I did try to climb it with her. But it was challenging for sure too to travel. We were also with two of our friends who are also a lesbian couple, and the four of us in Africa, in Kenya and Tanzania, it's homosexual is actually illegal, and so we did have to be, we had to be very careful, and that was very stressful. You know, you're there. It's fun. You're with friends. And of course, it's romantic too, being in the Serengeti, and we couldn't act as couples. And when people assume that we're heterosexual, or that we just said, yeah, sure, our husbands are at home, you know, if they saw our engagement rings. So that was stressful.
Mm. Mm. And how are you celebrating Valentine's night, girls?
So we are now in Nairobi, and we're staying with one of Lisa's high school friends. So we are going out for dinner tonight, and we're excited. We're going to do a double date with them, and we already gave each other our Valentine's Day gifts, too. So Lisa gave me a bunch of different... We did it with a low budget once, and we've already spent all our money traveling. So she gave me a bunch of certificates for massages, and I gave her a bag of her favorite candies, as well as a playlist of some romantic songs that made me think of her.
Well, that is really cute. It's been fabulous to catch up with you girls. Enjoy the rest of Africa, and then I think you're heading to South America, so perhaps we can catch up with you in April again.
Yes, we would love to. We're off to Brazil next.
Fabulous. Well, look, safe travels, have a super time, and happy Valentine's Day.
Okay, thank you. You too.
Okay, bye.
And you're on the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9 with the Priest of the Palm and the Poof. That's Andrew, Joy and Bertie. And that was Cobra Starship with You Make Me Feel. And that was for the gorgeous Pete, who's at home ironing and cleaning.
Oh, bless, on Valentine's night.
I wish he was at my home ironing and cleaning.
Yes, actually.
That would be very loving, wouldn't it?
Can you pass him round?
I left my helper fairies at home ironing and cleaning. I don't know how it's going to turn out.
I left mine cooking dinner. Goodness knows how the mess I'll have when I get home. So I just got one piece of news. On January the 6th, June, a panel discussion at the Gay Christian Network's annual conference in Orlando, Florida, Alan Chambers, president of ex-gay group Exodus, so that's the group that tries to make you straight, confessed that the overwhelming majority of those who have undergone ex-gay therapy had not changed their sexual orientation. Surprise, surprise. They have not experienced a change in the orientation or have gotten to a place where they could say they could never be tempted.
Oh. Well, finally they got there and they've admitted it in print.
Well, I hope they're actually going to close these organisations down now.
Yeah.
I doubt that they will, because they do so much damage to people. Exodus certainly... when they were in Australia, I don't know if they're still here, did a lot of damage to a lot of people.
Sure did. Now, we have some hot news to share with
everyone. We have some exciting news. Well, you're very, very excited.
Well, I'm very, very excited because this lady is from my homeland.
She's very sexy.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
Well, Horse, I hope you're listening, darling. We are going to meet the Scottish singer Horse on Thursday, and she's agreed to come into the studio and talk with us in our spirit lounge on our couch. And we will be running the first half of the interview next Tuesday, and she is playing live at the Thornbury Theatre next Friday, which I believe is the 24th.
That's correct.
And there are still tickets available. They're not very expensive at all. Very good value for money. There's support, and then she's on later. Have a listen to Horse. Download it off iTunes if you're not familiar with her. She's got one of the best, I think, voices in terms of any Scottish singer at all of our generation.
There's also a lot of really good clips on YouTube.
There are, you're right.
And if you want tickets, it's thethornburytheatre.com.
Great, yep.
Just go there and you can click on booking tickets.
Yep, super. So that's Horse will be joining us, and we will be running that next Tuesday.
And we'll even be having photos to put up on our website, which looks fabulous, Peter. Thank you.
Yeah. Now, is it time for us to say goodbye?
Oh, not again.
It is. Now, we're going to play out tonight with, of course, the one and only Whitney Houston. I know that Joy Radio have been playing a lot of her music since the news on Sunday, but I would like to play this one in particular. This, in fact, was written by Dolly Parton, and this was Whitney Houston's, I think, most famous track, I Will Always Love You.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.